A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, brand builders, before we start this week's show, just a quick reminder about this fall's Social Brand Forum in Iowa City, Iowa, on October 15th and 16th. You can learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Remember, when you register on or before July 31st, you guarantee that you get the best rate. Listeners to this podcast can get an even better rate by using promo code ONBRAND. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Park Howell. Park founded Park & Co., an award-winning brand and creative consultancy in 1995 in Phoenix, Arizona. The agency ignites the growth of purpose-driven people, products, companies, and causes through the power of storytelling. Park was named Advertising Person of the Year in 2010 by the American Advertising Federation of Metro Phoenix. The following year, his agency was recognized among the top 10 impact companies in Arizona by the Phoenix Chamber of Commerce. In addition to running Park & Co., Park created and is teaching the communications curriculum for the new Executive Masters for Sustainability Leadership program at Arizona State University. He turns sustainability executives into chief storytelling officers to advance their social initiatives further, faster. The curriculum is based on the agency's proven 10-step brand strategy and storytelling method called the Story Cycle. Park takes readers through the proprietary process in a book called Story Built, How to Craft Spellbinding Brand Stories in 10 Easy Steps, which will be published this fall. You can explore his insights about sustainable storytelling and download a preview of his book at parkhowell.com. He is a graduate of Washington State University and for 30 years has combined his degrees in communications and music composition and theory to craft and tell compelling stories that sell. What drives Park is his insatiable curiosity about how persuasive stories help us nudge the world in any direction we choose. Park, welcome to On Brand.
Oh, thanks, Nick. It's great to be here.
So I always like to ask someone that is so immersed in branding, advertising, creative, how did you get here?
How did I get here? I was actually about 13 years old, and my mom and dad took me and my two younger brothers to see a show at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle. And it was the first musical I had ever been to. And I was studying the piano and, you know, playing the piano at the time, whatever, and was just sort of intrigued by creativity, but I wasn't necessarily surrounded by creativity growing up in the forests outside of Seattle. But that one show completely blew me away. And I knew I wanted to do something in creativity, entertainment, and education, ironically enough. And so I really felt my best avenue to do that was to study advertising and communications and go into the advertising world and try to figure out how to connect creativity and commerce together to, you know, help brands grow. So that's, I kind of just fell into it through my love of music and then seeing this amazing show. David Cassidy was the star in it. And, you know, of course, I was just coming off his days on the Partridge Family. So here I was sitting, you know, nearly in the front row watching David Cassidy doing a Jim Cohen movie, Yankee Doodle, or not a movie, but musical, Yankee Doodle Dandy, of all things. And it just captured me. And after that, I said I knew I wanted to be in creativity and commerce somehow.
So it's David Cassidy. It's all,
yeah.
David Cassidy.
Can you believe that?
You know, statistically speaking, I'm sure there are a certain percentage of marketers here,
yeah,
because of David Cassidy. And I'm fortunate enough to be talking to one of them. Well, you know, you first appeared on my radar as the result of a mutual friend of ours, mm-hmm, Jay Baer, over at Convince and Convert, host, producer of several great podcasts out there. You know, obviously, Social Pros, Content Pros, Jay Today, all of those great shows. His most recent launch was your podcast, The Business of Story. And we were joking beforehand. I listened to so many of the Convince and Convert podcasts that I was excited to give anything a listen. But I was especially intrigued by this concept, like you talk about creativity and commerce, mm-hmm. about the business of story. And I think that story is one of those things that, you know, a lot of us talk about a lot, but mm-hmm. it's kind of hard to get your arms around in a business context. How do you define stories?
Story, a really great question. You know, I've been in this business of advertising and marketing for 30 years, and I think like all of us that have been in it, we create campaigns, or you have two TV spots that are produced for a campaign and you put it out there and one of them pulls very well and the other one not so much, and you scratch your head and wonder why didn't that one connect and why did this other one connect. And we will put out campaigns that you think, all right, this is really dialed in, and some of them take off and some of them don't. And I really wanted to figure out, how could I be more intentional, even more pragmatic in how to pull these together without killing that creative fire? And is there some sort of pattern that I'm missing that if we applied into our work, that we could be more right more often in the communications that we would create on behalf of our clients? And this was all late 90s, early 2000s, and I was just very puzzled over this. And then our middle son, we have three kids, our middle son, Parker, he was always fascinated with making movies. In fact, I showed him how to make stop action movies when he was a little kid with a video camera. Then he went to a high school here in Phoenix that had a really nice video and film department in it, actually. Believe it or not, Arcadia High School, it's where Steven Spielberg actually went to school. So he had a little bit of legacy there. Anyways, he and his pal put together a film that got into the Phoenix Film Festival when they were seniors in high school, and then he went on to study movie making in production at Chapman University over in California. Now he's currently in Hollywood as a motion graphics artist, has written his first film, took it to Cannes, is working on trying to get it funded and all that, so he's really immersed in it. Well, when he was going to school at Chapman, basically said, you know, since we're paying for the textbooks, when you're done with them, send them to me, because I want to know what Hollywood knows about how they can be very intentional in crafting these stories. And that's when I was first introduced truly to Joseph Campbell, America's foremost mythologist. Although he had been dead since 1987, I got acquainted with him and his work through these texts. And I saw the hero's journey that he had created, that was basically this universal pattern to story that has been around since the beginning of time. And it crosses all cultures, all religions. You just see this hero's journey in virtually everything, not only in the stories we read and the movies we love, but in the lives we actually lead. When I overlaid the hero's journey onto our typical work for brand strategy and then the creative that came out of it, I saw the same pattern for the very first time. And I'm going, wow, I mean, it's already innately in us. What if we just are more pragmatic about our brand strategy and the creative that results from that by using this universal pattern? And so I started trying it, and we had some immediate success with it. It was quite amazing. The only challenge was with Campbell's 17-step hero journey, there's a lot of nuance in it. And I found that we would get lost in this nuance, and our clients certainly would. So we took, inspired by that process, boiled it down to these 10 steps of the story cycle that we create and have been using now for almost 10 years. And we find it works everything from high-level brand strategy down to that actual tactical execution, be it a TV spot, radio, user interface, user experience on a website. And I think from my experience, is it works because it still follows this universal pattern to story. And it allows us to create content that cuts through the clutter, because it literally plays to the subconscious. Our subconscious minds are looking for this pattern to story that has been around literally since the beginning of time, because it's what brings meaning to us and our chaos of our lives around us. And it's where we learn and move ourselves forward. And so that's how we have come about it, and we've used it in every possible application, from helping brands, you know, understand their own personal story, to now I've been doing a lot of work with leadership coaching to help people own the boardroom, as I tell them, you know, to get away from their PowerPoints and inject story into the presentations they're making, turning their data into drama. Across the board then to, as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, to Arizona State University, came to us, saw the success we were having with some of our social causes and environmental work, and said, hey, could you write this curriculum for us? And been working with it now for the past couple of years with their executive master's program, teaching these executives how to bring a little bit of story to their lives so that they can connect better with all their audiences and move their brands, move their missions, move their sustainability initiatives further, faster.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the education side of things. I teach also here at the University of Iowa, and mostly digital marketing things. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really fascinating, this kind of this cross-pollination that you've created around. I wrote it down. I love the idea of turning data into drama. But you know, whatever kind of this overlay is, this. Not seen much, it seems like we've got our business hats on, mm-hmm. and you know, we can't always apply that creativity into how we're thinking, how we're communicating. And I think that mm-hmm. we struggle with that so much at work. But if you follow that all the way back to the education side of things, I'm glad to see more of that working its way into classrooms.
Mm-hmm. We have a very receptive audience, and you probably have felt this. I can tell you that teaching at ASU has probably been the most rewarding thing I think I've ever done in my career, only because you get to see people literally level up in their ability to tell stories and to connect and move people. And even if they're only kind of good at it, this is what one of my learnings from this. We've graduated our first class last year. And of course, in every class, you have that 10% that are superstars at it. And then you have, you know, a lot of people in between. And then you've got that 10 or 15% that just don't have the stage presence. And they just kind of kill themselves when presenting. However, what I learned is even those folks, when they use some structure and use small, short stories in strategic parts of their presentations, they will still move an audience to action. And how I know that is they would come up to me, and in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, wow, that was, you know, really brutal. But they would come up to me and give me a hug and say, you can't believe the response I'm now getting at the office. People say, I don't know what you're doing, John, but keep it up, because that was a really great presentation. And that's what underscored to me how powerful having basic structure to a story is. And it's as simple as having a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I know people go, well, duh. But here's where business falls down. We are taught in business not to tell the middle of the story, because the middle of the story is where the conflict is. It's where that not great customer engagement is going on. It's where the product is not working, you know, as we had promised it would. And in this day and age, when we as business leaders and brand strategists ignore the conflict in the stories that are natural to our stories, then we literally shoot ourselves in the foot with the audience out there. I was listening to one of your earlier podcasts, and you hear this over and over with your guests, you know, and I think everybody knows this. Consumers are in control over the brands. You know, the brands used to own the influence of mass media, but now the masses are the media. So therefore, we need to speak together to them on their terms. And that is about complete and utter authenticity. And with authenticity, you have to cover the conflict in your business, in your relationship. And oh, by the way, there is tremendous gold to be mined in that conflict, because that's where true customer engagement comes in, when you're there at every step of the ways and the highs and lows with your customer to really build that brand relationship. And that all starts with understanding and telling your proper and authentic brand story, and then, of course, living it.
So how do you, that's fascinating, thinking about from the beginning, middle, end story structure, and looking at most of our marketing communications, you know, the flashy beginning and mm-hmm. the everybody's happy ending are what we like. The other stuff's scary. So how do you take on the middle of the story?
How do you take it on? Well, a great place to go is to go to YouTube and watch Matt Stone and Trey Parker talk about how they do it with South Park. They created this formula called the and button, therefore, that I was actually introduced to by another gentleman who's going to be on one of my future guests on The Business of Story. His name is Randy Olson. Now, Randy Olson, Harvard-trained oceanographer, gave up his tenure to go to USC, became a USC film grad, and has since written three books on the subject and has become a documentarian. And his job is to help scientists do a better job of turning their data into drama so that they can connect with the rest of us. Well, he introduced me to this concept of the and button, therefore, that came from South Park, which I love the irony of that, that here's South Park, here's Cartman influencing, you know, a very educated gentleman who's trying to influence scientists to speak on our terms, and they do it through this and button, therefore. And Nick, it's as simple as starting a sentence. Here, I'll give you an example. So I've been in this advertising world for 30 years, and we've had our share of great successes, you know, a few mediocre missteps and some of those amazing failures. But times have changed. Technology has flattened the playing field. We as brand owners no longer own the influence of mass media because the masses are the media. Therefore, we use storytelling, the ancient bewitchery of story, to cut through the clutter and the cacophony of the attention economy to help people connect like never before. Sure, we have global reach with our messages, but few are getting through because they are simply not using this very primal structure of story. So there I've just given you my story in the and, which is the exposition, act one, the but, introducing the conflict of what's happened with technology and mass media and how now our customers, our audiences have the power over the brands, and the therefore. Here's the resolution. It's the ancient power and structure of story because it is how our brains are absolutely hardwired to connect with people and to make meaning out of life. And what do you do as a brand strategist? Your whole job is to create meaning around your brand, your product or service offering, and connect that to the people's lives, to make their lives better, to empower them, not just to sell them some crap.
It's interesting, too. You talk about recent episodes, and a couple of weeks ago we had Tim Washer on from Cisco with his comedy background and talking about how you can use some of those principles. And, you know, he talked about embracing those pain points, and it kind of makes me think of, again, the middle, that's where the conflict is. And I think that sometimes, with our business hats on, we think that that's where the bad stuff happens. It's also where the potential for bad stuff happens. And if there's pain points that could exist that you are simplifying in your customers' lives, then I think that, yeah, there's something you can make out of that. There's a story mm-hmm. you can tell.
Well, the pain points is where all the real gold is, as I mentioned earlier. You're absolutely right. We try as marketers to set up the joke and then give them a punchline without really developing the joke, and that's where the pain point comes in. But the brands that do a really nice job with that, Patagonia, I think, is a really good example of it. Here's a brand that goes out and basically says, don't buy our shit unless you really need it. Or if you're going to buy a jacket and you already have one of our jackets, who are you going to give that jacket to? Or if you got that old worn out jacket, can you fix it before you actually have to come in here and buy one? So that's a company that's embracing the pain points of they know that they have a carbon footprint and they know that they have an impact on this planet while they're still trying to empower their customers to go out and enjoy the planet. But they look at it like, you know, if we approach the conflict that we create in this world with honesty, we can actually turn our customers into brand activists. Not only brands, you know, customers that are out evangelizing our work and the good things we do, but actually foot soldiers to go out and to help protect the environment and society and everything that, you know, we enjoy in this world. And I think they are a really terrific example of a company that's all about sharing the conflict, but presenting resolution to it and having their customers be an absolute part of that journey.
Well, is there something in having your story crafted as well that if it's easy to understand for your audience, for your customers, mm-hmm. for your consumers, that the path to being a brand ambassador, a brand advocate, is easier if there's a story that they understand and that they feel like, because again, you take some of these brands like Patagonia, like Ben & Jerry's, you know what their story is. None of us have sat down and you know, read the book of their story, but we know it. So how you know, what's the relationship there in terms of a story, the ability to kind of reconstruct, or the kind of mm-hmm. the story that you're leaving people with, you know, and the value that that plays?
Here's what story does for all of us, and you can do this in your own personal life, and you can do it with your own company or your clients. Story does a couple fundamental things that ultimately ends at connecting our shared values, and people buy, adopt, and create rituals around brands that they share values with. So, for instance, I have learned that when you look at any situation or trying to understand an audience, and you do that through the lens of story and story structure, meaning I'm trying to understand what story are they currently living and what story are they currently telling themselves about my brand or my industry. You can use this 10-step story cycle to understand that. What it does is it creates greater understanding for your audience and empathy. Most importantly, empathy for your audience, because without empathy, you really have no story. So you understand where they're coming from. You understand their conflict, the trials and tribulations they're going through, and you have an appreciation for how your brand can help them bridge that gap and help, you know, level them up and empower them, as I mentioned earlier. Why do you want to do all that? Because you simply want to be able to tell and live. You have to deliver. It's just not enough to tell a story. You have to tell and live authentic stories that share and connect in the most obvious ways your values, the values you have and hold dear as a brand, with the values that they have and hold dear. And it's a great litmus test, too, because if you value one thing and they don't, and you reveal that through the lens of story as you are crafting these stories to weave together, then don't waste their time and don't waste your money and don't go after them, because chances are whatever you're trying to sell them is not going to be a long-term deal. They may buy it once, you may get some stuff off your shelves, but that's about it. So story allows you to do that, and anybody that's, you know, bought into any great brand story, you know, me, you know, like a gabillion people bought into the Apple story. Still do. Love it. Love what they all stand for. But I got to be honest with you, I think it's teetering a little bit since Jobs has passed away. I don't know that they have the author of that brand that they had in him. And I'll be curious to see what happens with their story, where it goes, not only in how they tell it, but how they actually execute and deliver, so that I can be a part of that story and be proud of talking about it. That'll be interesting to see what happens.
Is the, you know, speaking of stories, and you mentioned the word author, is there an author of a brand story?
Absolutely. There are several authors of it, and what we like to do when we're first working with either the chief marketing officer or the CEO, depending on the size of the organization, is to get them to start thinking like an author. And when they kind of look at me cross-eyed and, you know, cock their head to the side, they're like, what in the hell are you talking about? Every brand is on its own journey too, and you can literally take the hero's journey from Joseph Campbell, overlay it on the growth of a company, and you'll see it play out time and time again. And that's what we ask our leaders to do, is they say, we want you to take the story cycle, overlay it on your company. Of course, we can help you do that and really understand the story that your company is actually living right now. And what is the story? How do you want to change that story? You know, what trajectory? Are you a mid-market company now that you want to, you know, revise how your brand story is being told? Are you just starting out? Are you launching a new product? And get them, if you start having them think about it as if they're literally authoring that story instead of being a brand strategist or a marketing strategist, you find a humanity that comes out in people that enriches the story. It enriches the experience. And when we're all said and done with them, what they find is they can apply this now in their personal lives, and they can apply it certainly in their professional lives with their companies. So getting them to think like an author versus a business strategist brings way more humanity into what they're trying to accomplish. And then they follow this basic step. It's not a formula. It's more of a form that allows them to capture this content and then tell their story in any order that they would like, that, you know, it brings out the personality of the brand.
Yeah, speaking of stories and authors and writing, it's the labels, the words we choose are so important, because I don't know what it is, but when you were talking about kind of some of those key questions of what's your story today, how do you want to change that story, I'm just listening to you and thinking about, you know, my own business, and there is something, and it's like, I know how to answer that.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, what is our overarching strategic direction for the...
Yeah.
And then you shut down, and you get academic or corporate or something with a lot of baggage and all of these obstacles that seem to prevent good stories.
Well, Nick, you know, one of the, I do this. It's really fun. It's my favorite presentation I give, and I give it to MBA grads at ASU and out at Thunderbird International School of Management. And it's called How Not to Become an MBA Zombie. And I underscore to them that they are so smart and they're so crafted in the ways of data and PowerPoints that they have a way to walking into a boardroom and literally sucking the daylights out of it. And I'm going to show you today how not to do that. And I take them through a very fun workshop of how to, you know, reignite the inner storyteller. And I always tell the story about a gentleman by the name of Gordon McKenzie, who is a really amazing artist for Hallmark cards. And he was always pushing the boundaries. You know, he was there, I think, for 35 years. And this is back in the day when they were a very conservative company. Well, they knew that they were going to lose him and his team if they didn't do something, so they allowed him to start Shoebox Greetings and have, you know, kind of let their hair down and go and have a little bit more fun with this other brand. But the thing that was really interesting about Gordon is Gordon would often in his spare time go into elementary schools and work with the kids there because he wanted to encourage art in the world, and he wanted them to find their artist and grow their artist. And he would tell a story about going into the first grade, walking in, looking around the room, all this beautiful artwork up on the walls, and he would ask, who's the artist that did all this beautiful artwork in the room? And every hand would go up. Then he said, I could literally, in the same school, walk two doors down, walk into the second grade, all the artwork's up, ask the exact same question, who's the artist that made all of this beautiful artwork? And he said, half of the hands would go up. By the third grade, a third of the hands would go up. Fourth grade, a quarter of the hands. You can see where this is going. He said, literally, by the time I got to the fifth and sixth grade, I would be lucky to get one or two hands that would go up and say, I'm an artist. I think that's true with storytelling. And I think that we were all at the tops of our games when we were in kindergarten. And our education and society and business has simply closed the curtain on our ability to tell stories. I mean, how many times were you told to, you know, stop telling stories, Nick? You know, draw within inside the lines, Nick. You know, I mean, I heard this all the time. Mm-hmm. I went to a parochial school, and I always joked that I spent way more time in the confessional, not because I had a lot to confess, but I had a, you know, an audience right there, a captive audience. He had to listen to me and my stories. And I think all I try to do with these MBAs and the rest of the world around me is say, look, you really have this innate storyteller inside of you. It's simply been silenced, and I want to give you permission to bring it back out, and I'm going to give you a few tools that you can use immediately to show how to exercise this storytelling muscle and start applying it in your world. And my final note on that is, you know, in our line of work, telling stories in the advertising world is soup du jour. Every agency talks about their ability to tell stories, and rightly so, because we've all honed our craft. But what I'm trying to do and what we're trying to do here at Park & Company is not just say it. We want to teach our clients how they can get better at it, because we feel like if they are better at expressing their stories, even without us, you know, if they're internal teams on the C-level, venture capital level, whatever it is, that they are absolutely going to advance their mission further faster. And isn't that why they hire ad agencies in the first place? And then more so, even across the industry, I would like to, in any way I can, to share these tools with our colleagues out there and a lot of those folks that are in the small to mid-sized agencies that maybe don't have the training that some of us do, to help them get better at it. Because I do believe if we can help our clients connect in meaningful ways, that they will advance all of their missions further faster. And my own caveat on all this is use it for good and not evil, because it's effective in both realms.
Oh, evil storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in talking about helping everybody level up and become better storytellers, that might segue into my next question. I was recalling earlier you said, talked about the importance of getting started and, you know, talking to CEOs, chief marketing officers on how to think like an author. Does this always have to start in the C-suite, or is it able to be led, are initiatives like this able to be led from others internally within the organization and have it have it pushed up from external agencies? What's the role of the top, I guess, is the top in stories? Because it seems like if you've got a great leader who is just kind of organically the author of your story, Patagonia, Ben and Jerry's, Apple, all come to mind. But is that a required ingredient, or are there other recipes?
They're few and far between from the C-level up. What are their jobs? Their jobs are to return, you know, real income to shareholders and stakeholders. And so with the rare exception of the jobs of the world and so forth, you're not going to necessarily find them in the C-suite unless they're really engaged and in touch with themselves. So what we find from an agency standpoint is we typically are brought in underneath the C-suite and work with those middle managers that are really involved to make things happen day in and day out, where the rubber truly meets the road. And they've been frustrated. They're not connecting. Their sales teams aren't working. They're getting, you know, more and more pressure to deliver with fewer people. And they're the ones that see our work, or they've heard about us or whatever, that we come in, we take them through the workshop and demonstrate, look, this is not a gimmick. This is the way it really works, and here's how you can use it. And then they go out and they try it on. And then they come back and they always go, wow, that was amazing. And again, it's not a silver bullet we invented. This has been around since the beginning of time. We have just been inspired by lots of folks that have used very similar things. Anyways, once they see it in action, then they take us by the hand and walk us into the C-suite and say, you got to hear this, you got to see this, here are the results we've already had. And then you will typically get people on board, especially on the C-suite, because they're all about results. Quite often, Nick, too, I'll find the more educated they are, be they engineers, attorneys, MBAs and beyond, PhDs are the worst. You walk in, they will sit there cross-armed and look at you, furrowed brow, you know, kind of like, what's this storytelling bullshit? And I got to show them. I say, here, man, here's the way it works. Here's why it works. And depending on, it doesn't matter how smart you are, here's how all of our brains are wired to be able to recognize basic story structure, you know, exposition, conflict resolution, because our brains are wired to make meaning out of that, to do one thing only, and that is the survival of our being. We're constantly scanning the world, trying to figure out what does this mean so that this being can stay alive. And so our job as communicators is to bring meaning to everything we do, you know, in authentic, honest meetings. So it typically starts in the rank and file that are being asked to do lots of big stuff with very few resources. And I come in and we teach them, here's a secret weapon that you've known all along. I'm just going to re-reveal it to you and then be very intentional about it. Then it gets walked up through. But we never get called by a CEO. Sometimes through the C-suite, because they will have seen something a competitor has done or have been exposed to our work somewhere, but it typically comes through the middle management.
You know, you talk about being hardwired to recognize story structure patterns, and you talk about kind of the cross-armed PhDs are the worst. Well, is there a role of that, it, speaking of, because it's, I'm wondering where the disconnect is, and you talk about, I do think that as, you know, we go through school, like you said, we kind of get worse at some of these things, but is it that we're kind of taught that complexity is better? Is there a role that the dynamic of simplicity versus complexity plays here?
I really think there is, and it's a really great question. You know, when we level ourselves up through the educational world, we're getting smarter. And what is our field of competition? I'm smarter than that guy or gal. I can outthink that person. I can outnumber that person. I can outbore that person with my PowerPoints. And I think it goes back to having, we are taught at an early age that, you know, what goes on between your ears is going to be the measuring stick of how good you are going to be down the road versus what's going on in your heart, and then justified and backed up with what's going on between your ears. Robert McKee, who's a famous screenwriting coach known the world over, and in fact, he will be another one of our guests coming up here on Business Story in a few weeks. I took his screenwriting course over in Hollywood about 3 years ago. It's this legendary four-day baton death march thing, and he owns the stage, man. I mean, this guy, he's 74 years old, and he is an absolute force. And he's on that stage for 8 to 10 hours a day, and I learned a great deal. My son also joined me. Both of us went. He went because he wanted to be a screenwriter, and I went because I wanted to understand what did Hollywood know, and how could I use this. And then Robert and I have become good friends, and he has just quote after quote. And I just totally lost myself. I was just going to reveal a quote that he gave me, and now I totally spaced it. But what was your question again?
Just the role of simplicity and complexity.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. Speaking of simplicity and complexity. So he underscored to me in a day I spent with him outside of that where he said, you know, data and complexity does nothing but freaks our brain out because our brain doesn't know what to do with it. And so we need to find simple and novel ways to be able to talk to our brain so that it can make its decisions. And this is the line I was getting at. He said, you know, our conscious mind is simply the public relations department for our subconscious where all the real decisions are being made. All of our decisions are made in our gut, and then we back it up in our brains. So we got to sell to the heart, and then our brains will justify that purchase decision. But in business, we have it exactly opposite. We're all driven by numbers, numbers, numbers. Let's sell the numbers, features, benefits, and call it good. But that just doesn't work anymore. The sensibility of the market has completely changed. And again, the power's in the consumer. They want stories. They want to be romanced, and they want to be empowered, and they don't want to be lied to. And that's where the storytelling comes in.
Well, I also think, too, you know, you talked about that we kind of get that McKee's dynamic there backwards in business in terms of, you know, leading with the data and complexity. And, do you ever think that there's something of a, I don't know, kind of a four things like story that people think, that's just fluff. Because I feel like that's another huge obstacle that you have to overcome in selling the power of story.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when we were creating this curriculum for ASU, I'm one of four professors in it. We've got a really brilliant mind from Dell Computer named Bruno Sarda, who's one of their chief sustainability officers. He teaches global context. We've got a PhD, a surfer dude, smartest SoCal surfer dude guy I've ever known, George Pasilli's amazing. He teaches strategy. And then we have another very, very bright leadership coach, PhD in Kevin Gazzara. Well, when we were creating this curriculum, ASU brought in about 35, 40 top-notch sustainability executives for a day-long workshop, and we would present to them, here's what we're thinking, what are we missing, what do we need to do with this curriculum to help executives get there faster? And they went through all the others, leadership, global context, you know, strategy, and then I came up. They introduced Park Howell Communications and storytelling. Well, man, you could see that whole audience kind of go back in their chairs, cross their arms, look at me, with the exception of three or four of them that actually leaned forward, and they like, yeah, man, we're part of your tribe, dude. And I heard, you know, people said, oh, yeah, communications, that's the soft skill. And you hear that a lot. That's the soft skill. And so I said, and someone actually, you know, articulated that to me. I said, okay, well, let me put it in terms of why I'm here and what I'm supposed to be doing in this program. Now, we know sustainability is littered with jargon and data and very polarizing subjects with global warming and climate change and all that. But sustainability folks typically talk down to their audiences and they throw out all this blather and jargon to get the data across. So I told them, I went to the whiteboard, I said, let me create an algorithm for story so that you can understand how you can use this. And I took it and I said, data plus context plus metaphor times story equals meaning. And I put that up there and they all ran the algorithm really quick in their brain. And I said, why do we share all this data? Because we want it to mean something to people. But it doesn't mean anything to them if you present them in a very complex way, as you typically do in PowerPoints. You have to wrap it in context and metaphor and story and romance this data so that when they can look at it, you know, us the regular folk can actually make sense of it. And here's one other quick way of looking at it. Think about data. Data only does one of three things. Data either records an event that has happened, data monitors event that is currently happening, or data predicts an event in the future. So say, take for example, the temperature. I can tell you yesterday that it was 106 in Phoenix, and I can tell you exactly what that felt like and what I was wearing and where I made my missteps and probably what I had on. And, you know, if that was going to happen again today, I was going to wear something else. I can tell you right now in Phoenix, it's 96, and I'm sitting comfortably in my office having this meeting with you on a, you know, doing our podcast. And I can tell you tomorrow they're predicting it's going to be 109 tomorrow, which my brain goes, oh, wow. Okay, well, you know what? It's going to be Friday. I'm wearing shorts, flip-flops, light shirt. But what do I go to? I go to the event. I don't think about the data. I think about what the data tells me and it creates meaning out of it. And I think in business, we are so fixated on data as business leaders and strategists that it overwhelms our stories and we don't connect to anybody because our brains don't want to know about the data. They want to know what the data means. The data is important to the story, but it is not the story. The event that the data recorded, monitors, or predicts is the story that we all care about, our brains care about.
Touché with putting together a pretty awesome algorithm. I'm guessing on your feet at the time, that was...
Yeah, I pulled it totally out of my backside. I was kind of surprised myself. And I'm like, that ain't bad, actually. You know? But I think when you really studied it, and I really geek out on story and story structure now because I just find it so fascinating. You just find it throughout your life. You see it happening every day, every week in the epic journeys you take that it's a fractal of life. Stories are important to us because they're an absolute reflection of our lives. And that's why as brand marketers, professional communicators, business leaders, digital gurus, whatever we do, if our job is to connect with people, then why would we ignore the most primal instinct that we are hardwired for? And that is simple story structure.
You know, I almost think we need to understand better stories about story because I think so many get it wrong. But that's,
yeah.
That said, that's good for you.
And I take you back to the ABT. You know, the next time you have any presentation or story, write a simple two-line ABT. This happened and this happened, but... this happened, therefore I had to do this. And Matt Stone, Trey Parker talk a lot about when a script is falling short, they go in and they take the ands out and replace them with buts because the but always adds a conflict. So Cartman wants this and he did this, but then this happened. Therefore, then Cartman did this, but then this happened, you know, and it takes you through and propels the story forward. That's as basic as anybody needs to know. And I'll even bring it down to caveman utterances. This occurred to me the other day. The and, but, and therefore is nothing more than uh-huh, uh-oh, aha. There's story structure. That's all you need to know.
Well, that's, you know, I think that if there's one nugget that really stands out from our conversation for me, it's that exact point. It's the middle of the story that we're afraid to tell. And I think that sometimes it's conflict. And I think conflict in a dramatic sense, my background was in theater. So that's usually when people start to think I'm something of a flim flam man, but the conflict is where it's at. It's what moves things forward. But I think in corporate settings, we're taught to smooth out all conflict and that we don't want anything that's rough or doesn't fit. But that's the stuff that people remember.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm just going to give myself a new title, Chief Director of Flim Flam. I love that. But you're exactly right, Nick. You know, it is about the conflict and you can't ignore it because your customers are not allowing you to ignore it.
Yeah.
In fact, they will bring it out in all of its glory and gory online. So you better be there ready to address it or share it with them before they have the chance to spring it on you.
So I'll ask a somewhat loaded question as we start to wrap up here, knowing that you have... a great storytelling resource of your own coming out this fall, correct?
Yeah, working on the book. You know, the funny thing about the book, and I wrote it before, as I was writing the curriculum for ASU, I had written the book and then created the curriculum, and I was going to produce it like 2 years ago, publish it 2 years ago. And then I thought, no, you know, to be right, I need to actually teach this for a year and figure out what do I got to change on it. Now I'm a year and a half into it, going through the rewrite, and we'll have it out. I'm not sure if I'll actually be able to get it out this fall, or it will be the beginning of the year, but it'll be a collection of everything we've learned in this process from a brand strategy firm to how I've taught it at ASU, what works, what doesn't work. And it's really being captured in the podcasts we're doing now with Convince and Convert, the Business of Story. And your listeners can also go to our website, businessofstory.com, where I have some of these tools available that they can download for free, use them, start applying them. I've got one in particular that's an interactive PDF that they can download, and they can write their story. And I always educate them or encourage them. I said, write your story first, that answering that Simon Sinek why you do what you do using the 10 steps. And then, you know, do a save as. You get a brand new clean document again. And then, you know, write the story about your brand and your company. Save as. Now write the story about your customer. Save as. You have these three stories and see how they begin to intersect. And people that do this will start seeing their world open up in ways they hadn't seen it before, because they are simply using story and looking at their business and their brands and their customers through this universal lens of story, and it's ultimately what connects us all together.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Is there one other atypical story resource that you would point people towards? Everybody should read this or go watch a particular YouTube video or something.
Yeah, couple of them. I would say go and watch Andrew Stanton. He is one of the founders of Pixar. Have you seen that on TED Talk?
I have his TED Talk on story, right?
Yeah. And just warn your listeners, he has an extraordinarily off-color joke at the beginning, but the rest of it flows beautifully. I love that piece because it shows how the real Hollywood pros do story. And he talks about the mistakes they made and how they've overcome them. So I like that. And on my podcast, I bring in a lot of authors and screenwriters and creatives outside of the business world to teach us business folks what do these Hollywood writers and authors know that we need to know to use story. So I first send people to that, but plus people love watching TED Talks. The second is a really great, fun, interesting read called The Storytelling Animal by Jonathan Gottschall. Jonathan has written several books. Storytelling Animal is a New York Times bestseller. He's an English teacher. And to give you kind of a quick insight into Jonathan, he's half nuts, I think. He just published a new book called The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. And it's all about MMA fighting. And at the rightful age of 38, he thought, the only way I'm going to really understand this is to become an MMA fighter myself. So he went in and he trained for 3 years and had one fight, and in all of that study then wrote this book about, you know, why we fight, why men fight and why we like to watch. But he's really fantastic as an author because he explores a lot of different subjects. That is, why does the science tell us this and how does that intersect with our brain here? And that's where I like The Storytelling Animal. It's the first book I read that really underscored to me that this isn't some gimmicky crap that Hollywood does. That here is how our brain is hardwired for story, and this is why it's so irresistible to us. And it's a really fun read, too. He makes it very interesting. So those are two places I would send your listeners.
Awesome. Awesome. And final question. What's a brand whose story has made you smile recently?
You know, the brand that makes me smile is Sonos. I plugged it in a couple of years ago, you know, and this is the complete wireless sound system in the home. And the fact that I can have this world of music at my fingertips on my iPad, you know, iPhone or whatever, and then be able to so easily stream it through our home. And then some of the advertising, some of the way they work, Sonos works with its own story, I think is just really fun and interesting. And I think they're really in tune with their customer. And I like it because not only I think is the product cool and I'm willing to pay a little extra for it, it sounds fantastic in my home. Their logo is great, and how, you know, they did this redesign that when you scroll it on a computer, it has this really wonky looking I don't even know what the official term is for it, but a complete design accident that is just beautiful because it speaks to their story very well. And then they had fun with that particular story. But the final thing about Sonos, it has a brand ritual around it that my wife and I love very much: getting up in the morning, getting our coffee, getting our newspaper, sitting in our sunroom in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, and then hitting Sonos and putting on any artist we want. But that's a brand that continually makes me smile.
That is a great example. Makes me want to go put on some coffee and sit in the sunroom myself.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Park, thank you for joining us on Brand this week.
Well, thank you, Nick. It's been a real pleasure.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our listeners. Recently, our friend Javier Van Westphalen gave us a shout on Twitter about our recent episode featuring, speaking of simplicity, Siegel and Gales, Tom Wyatt. Thanks for listening, Javier. And a reminder, if you heard something that you liked on this episode or another, to go ahead and give us a holler using that hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything we talked about, including some video embeds of the South Park video, Andrew Stanton's TED Talk, and more over at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, help a couple of podcasters out. Head over to iTunes. Give the Business of Story a rating, review. Give the On Brand Podcast, all of the great Convince and Convert podcasts, some ratings, reviews. Click those stars. Let us know what you're thinking, and more importantly, help others find the show as well. Don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by the industry-leading Social Brand Forum. You can save $100 off of your registration by using promo code ONBRAND. Learn more and register for this premier digital marketing experience at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.